Show, we like to kick things off with our pals from Talk Radio News, none better than Ellen Ratner. Ellen, big day, 10-7 Senate committee passes the Syria use of force resolution. That is big. Tell me some more about that.
Well, basically, they had a committee meeting in the Senate. They had two Democrats that voted no, and Markey voted present. Very interesting. But it did pass 10-7. Senator McCain, yes, he voted yes.
Wow. So as we move along with the Syria thing, and obviously I say this on America Tonight all the time, there's, of course, the world is an ever fast-moving place, but this stuff with chemical weapons and what's happened here is just horrific. And there's been all kinds of conversations, as you can imagine, from all the nooks and crannies and different ways to go about this. But how about what's happening with Vladimir Putin and saying that any military strikes without UN approval would be an aggression? This on the heels of this whole G20 thing. Think it's going to be icy cold?
Yes, he's saying that, but on the other hand, he said if it can be proven that this came from the administration and did not come from the rebels, that he might go along with United Nations resolution. So that's kind of interesting. And actually, the Russian embassy requested to have some high-level people meet with Speaker Boehner, and Boehner has refused to meet with him.
Yep,
that was just tonight. I disagree with that. I disagree with the president not meeting with Vladimir Putin when he's in Russia. I just think you do meet with your enemies. One very interesting thing to come out of today was Chris Smith. And Chris Smith is somebody I work with a lot in South Sudan. He's chairman of the Africa subcommittee as well as the human rights subcommittee. And he wants to do a tribunal for all sides, that he will not vote for force. But he wants to grant immunity and plea bargains for the little fish so they can get at the big fish and figure out who's really responsible. I think that's a very sensible thing to do.
Yeah, I agree with you. Thanks for that little nugget. I appreciate it. The other big thing was, of course, Secretary of State Kerry was getting grilled a lot on the Hill, being asked about this whole thing about the red line, the president talking about the red line, you know, many moons ago. This seems to be a sticking point for a big back and forth, not just on talk radio, but all over the place. What's the deal with that?
Well, that's right. He said it's the world's red line, and the president said this as well at the press conference today. And Secretary Kerry said it wasn't just the president. The world is watching not what we decide also, but how we decide. So that is a little bit of what he's saying. He's saying, listen, when the chemical weapons conventions came out, that it was the world's red line.
Yeah, there you go, the world's red line. All right, thanks so much. Appreciate it as always. Ms. Ratner, we'll talk to you again. Talk Radio News, best. Bye. All right, coming up this hour of America Tonight, we're going to talk with Lisa Gibson. Lisa Gibson's brother was killed in the Pan Am 103 flight over Lockerbie, Scotland. She was in Washington when the plane hit the Pentagon. And she was in New York City on the same street where Faisal Shazad tried to blow up a bomb in an abandoned car, if you remember that, just a few years ago on Times Square, and didn't get away with it because the bomb didn't go off, and they ultimately caught him before he escaped the country. He was somebody who was assimilating here in the United States. So we're going to talk to her about terrorism because she thinks there is a different way, as Ellen was talking about there. Her way is through peaceful negotiations. She still thinks words are better than sticks, and she's seen some success in some of the projects that she's involved with, where she's gone to Afghanistan and other war-torn countries and met with people and met with leaders and whatnot. So she offers a completely different point of view from somebody else who's coming up later on this show, Jeff Atticott, terrorism expert, who says that we have no legal reason to be in Syria, because it's not about self-defense. The Security Council said no, and humanitarian intervention would be a no as well, because it's not on a mass scale, like you could argue in Rwanda. Remember when that happened? So the three things that would put us in the legal reasons category aren't there, is what he says. And he talks about the unintended consequences of what will happen with a missile strike and mission creep that's happened before, and how that can ultimately be a part of what might happen here. And the key thing is, according to Jeff Atticott, Security Council says no way. So that's coming up, too, here on America Tonight. Plus, we have nailed the score. That's right. Football is back Thursday night. It's the Ravens and the Denver Broncos. 17 weeks of football. Woohoo! It's not why we fight for all these freedoms and liberties, so we can enjoy our sports in the United States. Without a doubt, football is the biggest sport in this country. And just for fun, we have our little game during the football season, and that comes up in our third hour for just three segments. So you don't have to know anything about football. You're just giving us a score. And if your score and your team is right, then you nailed the score, and that means you get the prizes in the prize closet, which is really pretty cool. It's, you know, I don't know what's in there, but it doesn't matter. Free is free. Swag is swag. And if you win, you win. All right. There won't be any great gift giving, I believe, between the president and Vladimir Putin. You heard Ellen say there, critical of the president, saying that, you know, hey, why wouldn't you meet with the guy? Don't you meet with your enemies? I agree. Wasn't that Sun Tzu in The Art of War? Keep your enemies close, your friends even closer in a way. But Putin called the Secretary of State, as I mentioned, a liar. Chuck Hagel says Russia gave Syria chemical weapons. Putin just flat out denounces President Obama. And House Speaker John Boehner snubbed a bunch of Russian diplomats. So just another day, on Wednesday. Now you've got what's coming up, the G20 summit already unfolding in St. Petersburg. So can you imagine the icy glares between the two? I mean, they're diplomats, so for the cameras they may shake hands or whatever, but you can tell when there's disdain between two people. You can see it. So the president told reporters in Stockholm that the two countries' relations have hit a wall. And he's going to be in St. Petersburg. In fact, he should be there now in Putin's hometown Thursday. And they have been sniping back and forth, really, for a couple of months now. And these tensions are escalated over the fugitive, the former NSA contractor, Ed Snowden. Russia just said, I don't care, we're giving him temporary asylum. And remember, he leaked the information on the NSA's telephone internet surveillance programs, where we found out that they were looking in our underwear drawers and everywhere in between. So the president already canceled a meeting with Putin when he was on his way to the G20 summit over the Snowden decision. So here we go. This is as bad as it gets. And to have leaders openly sniping at each other and criticizing each other, normally that's behind closed doors, but this is out in the open. Wow. All right, so hang with us. Jam-packed hour. Can't wait to meet you on the other side of this one. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America. And he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier. And I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Gold isn't for you? Ted Anderson, president of Midas Resources, one of the world's premier gold and precious metal investing firms.
I get it.
You wouldn't buy gold if you believed that the government is doing a great job, that the Fed will stop handing out trillions of dollars like bailout candy, that Social Security would be there for you. That's not what's happening. You might even pass on gold if the stimulus package wouldn't fuel inflation, or that the dollar wouldn't lose value, or that your retirement would be secure. If all looks rosy to you, then now is not the time to buy gold. For the realists, there have never been more sobering reasons to diversify with gold. Since 2001, the U.S. dollar index has tanked 30%, while gold has risen 300%. Right now, savvy investors are adding gold to their portfolios. You should, too. Find out what they know. Call us, and I'll send you 10 reasons why gold will do very well, free. 800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
There are those curious about bitcoins and those using and making money with bitcoins. What are bitcoins? A bitcoin is the first decentralized currency that can be easily transferred from person to person over the internet. No bank needed. This means lower fees, and accounts can never be frozen, limited, or closed. You are in control of your money. And the best part? You can start earning and making money with bitcoins right away. No computer or expertise is required to earn money with bitcoins, and a growing number of merchants now accept bitcoins. Plus, they're easily exchanged for dollars, euros, and more. Learn more about the easiest, cheapest, most profitable way to enter the Bitcoin market and get paid every 2 weeks by one of the fastest-growing Bitcoin miners in the world at cloudhashing.com. Just like it sounds, cloudhashing.com. That's cloudhashing.com. We mine your business.
One, two, three. She's a real left winger, cause she bends down south and held him to my arms. She said, I could tell you stories that could make you cry. What about you?
We keep talking about Siri here, obviously, on America Tonight. You can throw in your 2 cents. You know the number, 855-266-KATE, 855-266-5283. She's come on our show before. She's just terrific. Lisa Gibson, I'll tell you what, she's trying to spread the word that there is a better way, certainly, in solving disputes than violence. In fact, she's written a book called Life and Death, A Journey from Terrorism to Triumph. And Releasing the Chains, too, Timeless Wisdom on How to Forgive Anyone for Anything. We've talked about this before. She understands the personal tragedy firsthand of what terror can do. She's experienced that when she lost her brother in the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103. Also, ironically, on September 11th, she was in Washington, D.C. when the Pentagon was hit. I've talked about being in New York when that happened. And then, I didn't know this one, she was actually in the theater on the street where the terrorist bomb, where they were trying to explode a car bomb. Remember Faisal Shahzad? We've talked about that before on this show. So she really has made it her life's mission to prevent terrorism. Lisa, thanks for coming on America Tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So people-to-people diplomacy, you think, is the most effective approach. And if we're going to really get into the tentacles of terrorism, you think this is the best way to go about it. And you have experience with this as far as the other part of your life in experiencing those events, but being able to take it a step further and go in, and you've worked with people all over the place, including in Afghanistan. And, you know, there'll be some people that'll be hearing this and they'll say, oh, no, there's no way. This whole idea that we can sing Kumbaya and we can preach peace and work it out just doesn't work. But you say that's not true. What would you tell the people who are dead set against trying diplomacy?
I think that they don't really understand the power that the individual citizens have in really changing the way our countries do one another. I mean, people think it's just the presidents of those respective nations that have, you know, input into that. In reality, a lot of the issues and the complexity of the conflicts that have existed throughout years, the roots of them are within the people themselves, and if, whether they've been misled or are educated to believe that certain people groups are against them or have wrong views about them, that then causes this natural, really bias against other cultures. And it's the only way to break that down is to bring people together face-to-face to dialogue and to really dispel a lot of the stereotypes that we have against one another.
Yeah, stereotypes. Boy, that is so big. And the stereotypes now, to me, instead of shrinking, they seem to be getting bigger. Am I right on that?
Yeah, they're in, even looking at Egypt, I mean, the whole thing is kind of exploding there. I mean, we obviously, as a country, supported the Morsi regime. Now it looks like we don't like them anymore. Now we're supporting the military. I mean, the reality is we're not really doing our due diligence on the ground and really helping to make sure that the masses understand the realities of what we as American believe, how we view them, because all we do is we support these people, then they turn on us. And if we don't get on the ground and have people educating and dispelling a lot of the false ideology that a lot of them are being and, you know, sort of enlisted into, it's just going to continue to escalate.
When you see what's happening in Syria and the conversation there, if you, you know, had a vote in this, in what direction would you go? What do you think the right thing to do is with Syria?
I absolutely think that we have not really even scratched the surface in terms of trying to do some brokering of peace. I think that, you know, people have said this diplomacy has failed. I have yet to see any diplomacy even be initiated in that region. And that's, to me, the biggest challenge. And even the people I know from Syria, I've been dialoguing with a lot of people in North Africa and the Middle East around this issue, and a lot of them are in agreement about whether or not we should be engaged in some kind of attack, because there's a lot of confusion on who are really these rebels. Because I've heard some people think it's the chemical attacks are being spread by the rebels, not by the Assad regime. So do we even know enough to just start bombing them? At this point, I don't think we do. And I think the best approach would be to broker some type of peace dialogue, and then include bringing the leaders of the Arab world in, because they have a vested interest in this as well.
And you know this, too. Certainly, we've heard about peace in the Middle East for a long time. We've seen a lot of photographs of presidents shaking hands and all that sort of stuff. And you know, because you've been there firsthand, you've visited several countries, you've worked in several countries, that what I think is, and it's what you're talking about, is it's an incredibly slow process, because you're talking about thousands and thousands of years, especially of different religious beliefs, whether it's the Shiites, the Shiites, the Sunnis, the Kurds, whatever. And that is a big part of the culture. And for some reason, I think a lot of the diplomats, not all, but because some certainly do get that, but a lot of people just miss the boat on that. Do you think sometimes that's part of it, not getting the culture, not being indoctrinated enough in it?
Absolutely. Not really understanding the history and the implications of all that. I mean, for example, in Syria right now, a lot of the Christians are being attacked because historically Assad was somewhat favorable towards the Christian community. And so they're being looked at as the main target of the rebels, who legitimately have a cause to want to come out from under the dictator that they've been under. But to attack the Christians just because he was, you know, favorable to them for years is definitely not the answer. So it's really, you know, helping people understand the complexities of what's going on over there.
Yeah. Sadly, though, when we see, especially with Syria, the chemical weapons and the UN and others gathering information on the evidence of that, and we talked to somebody who was on the ground there, and they told us what they certainly saw, what they heard from the people. I think what is just so horrific to me is the children in the middle of this whole thing, young children, boys and girls. I mean, for goodness sake, it's, I mean, just to me, flabbergasting that you would turn weapons on the kids, and it's certainly the innocent people, too, as well. You know, when as those images keep coming out and are being burned in everyone's brain all over the place, it's very hard to say, okay, we're going to have this, we're going to go diplomatically here. Instead, boom, we're going to level them with missiles. We're going to send missiles. We're going to go try to find the cache of chemical weapons, which I think by now have been covered up. But ultimately, no matter what happens, I'll tell you what, I think the whole Assad regime just stays, because then we leave, you know, we take our naval ships out, and does it make it that much better for the people? It's the people that ultimately will suffer in this, right? More.
Absolutely, and that's the biggest challenge, is we look at what is the appropriate response. I mean, I have friends I've been talking with in Libya right now, for example, who, you know, saw what happened during the regime and that NATO came in and did air raids, but it's no more secure now or no more stable. And some of them are questioning whether or not it's better since Gaddafi left. And so those are the kind of things that I think that are we really invested in the long run in helping these countries rebuild in developing a civil society after the war is over? Because it's not just about sending in Air Force. It's about really then helping them transform from what they went from before to what they want, and that's democracy.
And so as I mentioned in the beginning, I didn't give any specifics, but you regularly travel to war-torn nations that engage in terrorism, and you work to train leaders in how to prevent and resolve conflicts. Of all the places that you've traveled and all the people that you've met, what are you most proud of at this point?
I think for me, probably the most would be Libya, just because of a very strong personal connection to that nation, having lost a loved one at the hands of Gaddafi, then being able to not only go there and serve, but then to take what I've learned about how to more effectively resolve conflict and really impart it to the leaders there to hopefully begin to change their mindset. And the feedback I've gotten from everyone is this is so important. We've lived under really an abusive regime where, you know, everyone was in this chaotic state, and we need to learn a different way of doing things. And so there's a strong commitment to that from many people there, but we're just beginning to scratch the surface and really getting that word out there.
Yeah. Last International Peace Day, you were in Afghanistan, and you were teaching, what I mentioned, conflict resolution. Do you think when we leave Afghanistan, as far as the troops are concerned, in 2014, we leave it a better place?
I think I was telling somebody recently, and I really do believe that the biggest impact that's come to Afghanistan has mostly been from the civil society organizations and the nonprofits that have gone in and helped with capacity building. And because in many ways, the Taliban still has a very deep inroad into a lot of the communities. Many people still fear that it's going to get worse and become, you know, less secure. But what we have done is at least at some level impart information, knowledge, helps to empower the women and the children in that community to hopefully be able to, at some level, begin to transform the country. And that, to me, is where the lasting impact is.
Yeah. Lisa Gibson, thanks so much for joining us on the show. If somebody wants to pick up one of your books, how can they do that?
They can actually find it online at bookstores everywhere.
There you go. Amazon.com. They can go there, right?
Yep, Amazon.com. Yeah. They can find out more at releasingthechains.com as well.
All right, perfect. Lisa, thanks. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again down the road.
Thanks so much.
Weakened by GMOs, stressed out about money, and blasted by the electric environment. Hi, I'm Pastor Jenny, and that was the state I was in back in 2010. Then I learned about RNA drops. I learned that 97% of my DNA that scientists have called junk is actually packed with millions of gene switches that play a critical role in controlling how my cells, organs, and other tissues behave. I learned I don't have to put up with disease, decay, or decline like I'd been conditioned to believe. I began taking RNA drops, a 100% natural formula designed to turn on those switches and provide me with amazing health and joy. Learn more about RNA drops and order a free sample today. Visit rnafreesample.com. That's rnafreesample.com. Or call toll-free 888-577-3703. Pay only shipping and handling for a free 30-day supply of RNA drops. Get the information you need and the health you want at rnafreesample.com.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
This October, thousands of people from all corners of the world will descend upon Orem, Utah. But it's more than the fall colors or the snow-capped Wasatch Mountains that brings them. It's the semi-annual Great Utah Preparedness Expo at the Utah Valley University Event Center. It's the most unique preparedness event on Earth, with over 30 world-class lecturers giving over 50 presentations. Learn from experts about below-ground greenhouses, super winter survival, herbal medicine, bunker building, even urban evasion and escape tactics taught by SEAL Team trainers. These people are the very best, and they only get together twice a year at the Great Utah Preparedness Expo. There's also over 100 vendors selling very unique preparedness, emergency, and survival equipment, plus solar and alternative energy products. The semi-annual Great Utah Preparedness Expo, October 11th and 12th in Orem, Utah. Sponsored by Youngevity. For more, visit superprepfair.com. That's superprepfair.com.
Do you owe the IRS money that you can't pay? Are tax liens and levies ruining your life? Are you tired of being afraid just to go to the mailbox? If this describes you, then Dan Pilla can help.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been solving tax problems for more than 30 years. In fact, I wrote the book that made it possible to negotiate settlements with the IRS, and I've helped thousands of people do exactly that. Call now at 800-346-6829 to learn how I can help you. You know your IRS debt will not go away by itself, but you don't have to live in fear anymore. New changes to IRS policies will help more people than ever before eliminate their debts once and for all. There's no need for you to suffer another day with IRS debt. Call 800-346-6829. I can help you eliminate wage and bank levies, release tax liens, and negotiate a settlement with the IRS that will put your tax nightmare behind you forever. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, taxhelponline.com. That's taxhelponline.com.
You know about RVs, you've heard about bunkers, but surviving is not recreation, and man wasn't made to live underground. Introducing Survivalist Camps, the ultimate fully functional off-the-grid survival bug-out house that's mobile, well-equipped, and custom-built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Go to survivalistcamps.com to learn more. That's survivalistcamps.com, providing your basic needs to survive. Survivalistcamps.com.
What if you had a witness everywhere you drive? Now you can with video-cam.com. From truckers to motorcyclists, the handy video dash cam can be used for insurance claims, accidents, police encounters, road rage, or natural disasters. Has instant screen playback and optional night vision. Get the best quality, affordable HD dash cameras available at video-cam.com. That's video-cam.com. Or call 855-855-2022. Always have a witness with video dash cam.
This idea that a military response is the only way to respond to what's happening in Syria is just not true. I remain unconvinced that the use of force proposed here will work. The only thing that will prevent Assad from using chemical weapons in the future is for the Syrian people to remove him from power.
Not a one member in my district in South Carolina or the emails of people that have contacted my office say, go to Syria and fight this regime. To a letter, they say, no, do not go into Syria. Don't get involved in their civil war. All right, so it is wide open once again. What do you say? I think most of this audience is saying no, and a few saying yes because of the chemical weapon. So here we are again talking about Syria and all aspects of it, the tale of a couple of different directions. Obama's Syria strike idea or plan is getting some blowback, getting some resistance, which you just heard there. That was Congressman Jeff Duncan, a Republican from South Carolina, saying, hey, no one in my district wants anything to do with it. And then before that, you heard Senator Marco Rubio, Republican from Florida, of course, talking about being unconvinced and perhaps not the only option. And you're going to hear some of that coming up in our next hour when we chat with Jeff Atticott, terrorism expert, who is, suffers no fools, is a longtime military man, a lawyer, actually, for the Navy, and comes from that background and now runs St. Mary's School of Law in San Antonio, where they focus on terrorism and other aspects of it. So, and he speaks all over the world and whatnot, telling people how to be safe and what kind of things to look for. So we look forward to that coming up in our next hour. Also, Brandon Lang. There was a movie called Two for the Money. Matthew McConaughey, Al Pacino were in it. And Brandon Lang, it was his story. And Brandon Lang is an odds maker guy who almost had a big future in football, then got hurt, then went into the odds-making business, and that's what that movie was about. McConaughey played him. But anyway, he has a website, and lots of people seek his advice during a football season. So since we don't know what the game of the week is, I thought it'd be fun to have Brandon Lang on during the season, and he'll join us as well. So you never know what you're going to get with America Tonight. We like to shake it up. We like to mix it up. And that's what's happening with Syria. It's just one great mix-up. You know, the problem is, once again, no matter what, is we are always reacting so far after the fact, aren't we? So 2 years ago, McCain, who was all over this, we got to be in there. We got to be in the middle of the Syrian thing and Assad. And, of course, nothing was done then. Now it's this whole craziness over the debate over the red line. And you've got this push to build support for an attack in Syria. And is it gaining momentum or is it losing a little bit of steam? Because, you know, now you have some pretty powerful alliances if you're the White House. You have the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, who is pushing the people in his camp to back a resolution authorizing the use of military force, right? And you have, of course, Nancy Pelosi. You have Eric Cantor, the number two House Republican from Virginia, pushing with Boehner for support for the president's request for a resolution of force from Congress. So you got key Democrats and key Republicans that are trying to make this happen. I think it's inevitable that Congress says yes, even though you have naysayers and people that are going to vote no. I think they're just going to, they're resolved to do this, and they're going to vote for this somehow. I've said this before, it doesn't matter what kind of fuzzy math or whatever math it is, as long as the president has enough to make it look good, it's going to work. And he's going to have enough to make it look good, because I think enough people will, in the end, even if they argue and scream and have a little debating, they're going to cave in, and that's what's going to happen. So my contention is, based on all the information I have in front of me and the people that I've talked to, one of my biggest problems with this is, once we attack Syria with missiles, which we know all the key important places that we want to hit, any kind of chemical weapon spot is going to be changed on the ground. There's no question. So there's a possibility of collateral damage hitting some innocent people and then having them dragged out to say, look what the Americans did. There is also what will happen, and the probability is, okay, so I have my red line in the sand and you crossed it. Now we're going to show you who's boss. We do the missile thing and then leave. And what's going to be different in Syria for the people after the United States leaves there? So will there be more maneuvering? Because there's not supposed to be any boots on the ground. There's not supposed to be anything, supposedly, more than that. And if that's what happens, yeah, then you have to ask yourself, okay, now we're really stepping in deeper than we said we were going to be in the first place. But what will be different for the people of Syria if Assad's not taken out? If it's still an Assad regime, then nothing's different. So the Middle East and this part of it, Syria, is still strained after we're gone. So go figure. The Senate panel okaying the force in Syria is one step. But then when you have the vote across the board, after the 9th will be another step. You have Vladimir Putin saying that Kerry lied about Syria, and then you have the State Department, of course, deciding that they were going to shoot back on Putin because everybody's at the G20, and this is an awkward deal here. What he said was specifically, Putin claimed that the main combat unit of rebels in Syria is a unit of Al-Qaeda. He said John Kerry knows this but lied about it Tuesday in the Senate hearing on what's happening. He says he's openly lying, he knows he lies, and this is sad. And he was specifically talking about an exchange between John Kerry and Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson. Johnson asked Kerry if the U.S. believed the once more Western-leaning opposition was becoming infiltrated by terror groups. And so what was his response? Basically not true. That's what he said. It's basically not true. Saying that the opposition has increasingly become more defined by moderation, more defined by, this is Kerry's words, by the breadth of its membership, and more defined by its adherence to some democratic process, to an all-inclusive minority-protecting constitution, which will be broad-based and secular with respect to the future of Syria. Oh, that sounds like hogwash, doesn't it? And he said that's very critical. So Putin says, ah, that's crap. That's nonsense. It's not the first time we've heard this kind of a visceral response, is what was shot back from the State Department, that this is nonsense, that the Secretary of State testified truthfully and accurately to the Congress. I don't know. What do you think? Is it such a stretch in this case? Here's the deal. How do they know that there's moderation in this, these rebel groups? How do they know that? And what is moderation in Syria? What does that mean, moderation? Oh, they want a democratic process? Now, Russia backs Assad and certainly might have supplied weapons. So they're not going to get involved in any kind of military action in Syria at all, whether it's the West that does it or UN or anything. But did he hit an Achilles heel in accusing John Kerry of not really understanding what he's saying about the units, about these rebel units? That what does that mean, more defined by moderation and more defined by the breadth of its membership, and that they're going to be broad-based and secular in the future? Wow. But we liked Assad. We keep backing the wrong guys. We liked Morsi. And then what happened there in Egypt? Are we just lousy pickers or what? So before, Assad. Now, no, not Assad. He's bad. I mean, that's the problem. Obviously, you can't control what happens in these regimes, but there's the answer. Should we be involved in it in the first place? How many places can we get involved in? Do you really think we have a moral responsibility to be there? Do we really have the responsibility on our shoulders to go in? See, in my head, I keep thinking, wow, we didn't do anything with Rwanda. I mean, they talk about blowing people up, talking about atrocities and genocides. We didn't do anything there. Nothing. And you've got this report out that I just took a glimpse at, that somebody sent a link to me. It, of course, is being reported by one of the foreign rags, Mail Online, I think it was. And they talked about the Pentagon knowing that it would take 75,000 ground troops to secure Syria's chemical weapons facility, knowing that in 2012, that's what they would have had to do. Well, of course, we didn't do it. If that's the case, if that's true, if there was a written series of military options for dealing with Assad 18 months ago, and we didn't do it, and they knew that the Syrian dictator had weapons, those kind of weapons, and he was using it against rebels within his borders, well, then we've had knowledge of it for a very long time, and we didn't do anything when we maybe had the chance of the art of surprise, perhaps. Or maybe logistically it was just impossible to get there. So won't it still be impossible this time around? Just thinking out loud. All right, coming up, there were other things that happened, certainly. Some odds and ends on the day, mixed in between here in our final segment of this Hour of America Tonight.
Tonight. time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Got a simple question for you. Can you sell? Yes? Okay. Can you sell the intangible? If yes, and you'd like to work 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, with no overtime, no weekends, if you're passionate about not closing sales, but about opening relationships, if you truly have a desire to serve global clients who need your advertising expertise, and you're local to the Twin Cities and Burnsville, are hardworking, self-driven, with experience in sales, marketing, or advertising, are personable and a whiz on the phone, GCN wants to talk with you right now. GCN, the Genesis Communications Network, is one of the largest independent talk radio networks in the world, and we're hiring right now. We offer benefits and an excellent commission structure. Experience preferred, but we'll train the right person. Is that you? Submit your resume today to advertise@gcnlive.com. Again, that's advertise@gcnlive.com. Come work with the Genesis Communications Network, an equal opportunity employer.
Alabama, it's coming, and it's the event you and your family will not want to miss. The Southern Preppers Convention and Green Living Expo, Saturday and Sunday, September 7th and 8th, at the newly renovated Oxford Civic Center in Oxford, Alabama, where admission is totally free. There's something for everyone. Free classes and seminars on topics like food preparation, food harvesting, and food preservation. Free giveaways every 30 minutes. You could win seed kits, food, doTERRA oil, starter kits, water filters, and more, including a year's supply of food. Guest speakers include Bob from Black Dog Survival School, Mike from White Harvest Seeds, Dr. Tom Stoner from Dr. Med Kits, and more. And be sure to stop by and check out the Youngevity booth, the Southern Preppers Convention and Green Living Expo, September 7th and 8th, a weekend of education and preparation that's totally free to attend. Don't forget, the Country Inn and Suites in Oxford has special rates available for those who attend the expo. Get all the details at thesouthernpreppers.com. That's thesouthernpreppers.com.
Walks further down the street, he's been pulling all over. No sound but the sound of his feet. Machine guns ready to go. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat? Out of the doorway, the bullets rip to the sound of the beat. Yeah. Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust.
A couple little nuggets on Syria, then we're going to move on to a few other odds and ends. Rand Paul, the senator from Kentucky, voted no on Syria. So, you know, he's the renegade guy that I really like because no matter what, I think he goes by what he believes to be the right way to go, the right path. I don't think he's pushed by a political agenda as much as so many others are. And he says he supported the decision to go to war with Afghanistan after the nation was attacked on 9/11. And he, you know, in his mind, because of course he wasn't the senator then. But in talking about and looking at Assad, what he ultimately says is the U.S. shouldn't fight a war to save face, and he wouldn't vote to send anyone to sacrifice life and limb for a stalemate. I mean, and there you go. Is this another stalemate? Are American interests at stake? Are our interests at stake with this one? I mean, clearly Assad isn't our friend, is not our ally in any way, shape, or form. But if we boot, if he is booted, and we are responsible for the booting, are we going to get that stability in the Middle East? Are we getting, or would pushing him out get a stranger kind of instability there? Who are these rebels? Are they really going to back American interests? I don't think so. I don't think they will. And we don't have enough information to look at that and say, yeah, I have a good feeling that this is going to go in a better direction. And the interesting thing is the president, with asking for congressional input, and, you know, does he necessarily need congressional approval? It depends on how you look at it. So this is more, I think, a courtesy vote more than anything else. But do you know only 9% of the American population supports this intervention at all? That's a Reuters Ipsos poll. So Congress votes against it. The president would still involve us in the middle of this because he could still invoke that right, or I think he would. So that would be a strange thing anyway. And the what's interesting here is in looking at who's saying yes and who's saying no, with Rand Paul, I think, listening during that hearing of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on Capitol Hill and then voting no, I say bravo to that, because he's sticking to what he believes to be the right road. And he says the U.S. shouldn't fight a war to save face, and I would say the same thing. This whole crazy thing about the red line, which that's the other nugget, the president saying, well, that's not my red line, it's the world's red line. So once again, it's all about the semantics of I said this and this is what that meant and let's go back and weigh it. And it comes in all different sizes, and if it doesn't fit, then we're going to say that the world really set the red line. It wasn't me that set the red line, and it's ridiculous. So I'd have to say that this whole red line thing and the idea that we have to go in is because it is a safe, face-saving deal. And to do it for that reason is just another wrong reason, especially when we look at the possibility of some of the consequences that could come out of this. All right, I promised myself I was going to give you some of those other things, some of those other odds and ends before we jumped out of this hour of America tonight. One of the craziest things that I saw, I think today when I just woke up, I was drinking a cup of coffee, and I saw this headline that said, the Boston mayor says he'd blow up Detroit. And you know what he was talking about? He's saying, I just start all over again. It's lame. It's wrong. I would just start all over again. He's saying, Tom Menino is his name. He told the New York Times Magazine if he had to live in a different city, he'd move to Detroit. And what would he do when he got there? He'd just totally scrap it. Start all over again because it's such a wreck. It's an out of control. Under the control of state-appointed emergency manager, became the largest city to declare bankruptcy. Remember, we talked about that. And he says that, you know, that he would just rip everything up and start again, because you have city buildings that are boarded up, and you have bankruptcy, and you have people leaving the city. You can't even give the houses away, and it's a nightmare. So here's the thing. There's a little bit of backlash over saying, using the word blowing up. I just blow up the city and start all over again. So now Detroit has invited Tom Menino to visit the city himself to check it out and see. So the Boston mayor had to apologize for his comments because Mayor Dave Bing didn't appreciate the slight, especially because he says of the Boston Marathon earlier in the year, he says it's regrettable that the Boston mayor used such an unfortunate choice of words to describe what he would do if he came to Detroit. And he said, I would think that a mayor of a city that recently experienced a deadly bombing attack would be more sensitive and not use the phrase blow up. I don't think Tom Menino meant that in that way, but he was making the point that he thought the city was a sewer and he would start all over again. But isn't it interesting, the word play that he picked up on and how he slammed them. So now the mayor says he'll apologize. Now they're talking about him coming out there to tour. Wow. U.S. car sales, completely different, reached a six-year high. Really? Who's buying the cars? I thought people were still trying to string jobs together. Even though we keep hearing that, oh, less people are unemployed. Yes, but they're working at McDonald's and then they're picketing. So U.S. car sales are up, right? Which I'm surprised by that. So car sales are adding momentum to the economy, but are the buyers getting the good deal, or are they paying record prices? I think they're paying record prices. Sales of new cars, trucks, and crossovers, that's what they call them, seem to have run at, they say, a 16 million annualized pace. The General Motors, Ford, Chrysler, Toyota, Nissan are the big brands that are showing double-digit gains. Hyundai set another sales record, even though they had some capacity problems because of a dispute in South Korea. And you know who was the big loser? Volkswagen. Sales slipped 1.8% for this last month for August. But Toyota was up, and there are so many others that were up. Global sales are 22.8% gain in the month of in the U.S. market. Up 22.3% Nissan, an August record. How about that? So people are buying cars. Saying, what are you talking about? Struggle. There's no struggle here. I want to get my car. Of course, Americans are in love with their cars. So whether they're poor or not, they find a way to have I've found that out, to own a car. The F-Series had its 25th consecutive monthly sales gain. The sales are now running at a pace that they haven't even seen since 2006. So pickups in general have been the hottest ticket. Pickups, pickups, pickups. It's so much so that Ford recently added a third shift at a plant in a Detroit suburb of Flat Rock, Michigan. So there you go, Mr. Tom Menino, mayor of Boston. Things are picking up. They've even added a third shift just outside of Detroit because there's such a demand for pickups. How about that? One last one for you as we round the final turn on America tonight. Sadly, there was a Texas school stabbing that left one person dead and three wounded. Anytime you see school violence, guns, stabbing, you're worried. Where does your mind go? You can't help it. You think, oh, Columbine, did they evacuate all of the people? Harris County is where it happens. They think it could be gang-related, but they aren't saying that for sure. One person, as I said, was killed, and two others were taken to a hospital. They had news helicopters all over the place. They did evacuate the kids from the school, so that obviously, the high school, that obviously was a good thing. Any thoughts on the show, you can send them to me, americatonight.net.
Safer and cheaper than prescription drugs?
Glad you asked. The answer is Renovation Teas. Herbal remedies are much safer and much cheaper than prescription drugs. Taste great, and most importantly, herbal teas are effective and non-addictive. Renovation Tea is especially unique, and here's why. We spent years researching herbs and their beneficial properties. Renovation Teas uses only 100% organic, fair trade herbs. Our teas are blended towards specific ailments and health conditions, such as diabetes, blood pressure, anxiety, libido, detox, and much more. All Renovation Teas are formulated and hand-filled in Arkansas. Take care of yourself naturally, the way Mother Nature intended. Order Renovation Teas at renovationtea.com or call 870-784-3121. That's 870-784-3121. Renovation Teas. Renovate your health one bag at a time.